During the pandemic, the judiciary in New York was not spared from the budget crunch caused by a drop in state tax revenues. But with an influx of cash from Washington, D.C., the state's court system appears poised for a bounce back in funding based on the budget bill introduced in early April. To make sense of the resources going to New York's courts and how they might be spent, we spoke Tuesday afternoon with Ryan Tarinelli, the New York Law Journal's reporter at the Capitol. Welcome back to the show, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
So set the scene for us in terms of the cuts the court system endured during the fiscal year that just completed on March 31st. How much spending were they forced to shed, and what was cut as a result?
So they were forced to basically find cuts of $291 million. And it was basically came from the governor's administration saying, our budget is not looking good. We are seeing the economic fallout of the coronavirus pandemic. We're recommending you cut your budget. Court system said, yes, we're going to do that. So that included things like a strict hiring freeze for non-judicial workers. So your clerks, court officers, administrative assistants to judges, attorneys in the court system. If a position is vacated, you're not going to be filling that position. There were cuts to travel. They deferred pay raises for non-judicial workers. Deferred other Social Security costs, and most controversially, they decided to not renew 46 older judges who wanted to stay on the bench past the state-mandated retirement age in New York.
The number you threw out there, $291 million, what is that in the scope of the entire budget for the state's court system?
Yeah, it's a 10% cut, which is significant. That is deep, and that is major. The last time they saw that, a cut of such size really was in 2011 when their budget was cut by $170 million. And a lot of people believed that in the 2011 cut that the court system really hasn't rebounded from that cut. So you can imagine an almost $300 million cut. That's really significant to the court system. They had to take immediate action. They, you know, cut these older judges, continues to create a firestorm of controversy, and along with the strict hiring freeze, which has had a tremendous impact on the courts, the day-to-day administrator of the court said that if the hiring freeze remained in effect much longer, they can see a staffing level that they haven't seen in decades, that their staffing level would be so low that they haven't seen it in decades. So it's a really serious situation as far as the backroom people who take care of the court system, make sure things get filed on time, make sure that cases are getting moved through. So a really, really serious situation.
And when did they begin making those cuts? Because I don't think this was at, say, the start of the fiscal year in April. This was, you know, late in the process, right?
Yeah, they instituted some of these cuts to the older judges came towards the tail end of the year. Basically, they tried everything else that they could to cut to try to reach the $291 million, and they came up short. And then they said, okay, we need to make this really tough decision to cut our colleagues, some of the older judges in the system. They have by far some of the most experience. They're well-known within the legal community. Lawyers know them. They've been around for quite a while. And so they had to make that decision, and that's caught a lot of flack, particularly because that decision basically only ended up them saving $7 million this fiscal year, and there are savings expected in the future, but basically they were only saving $7 million this fiscal year. They really wanted to reach that $291 million figure for the governor's office.
So let's fast forward to right now, where we've got a new proposed funding that for the fiscal year that starts on April 1. Compared to what was allocated last year, what does the funding plan look like?
Yeah, so basically this year looks exactly, it's basically a pre-pandemic funding level for the court system, which is really great. The court system is very excited about that. They are saying that they're going to be able to refill some of these spots that have been left vacant because hundreds of people have left, you know, during this pandemic. So they're going to be able to do that. They're going to give these non-judicial workers pay raises, which is really good. They're going to be able to repay some of their Social Security payments that they deferred. So this is a really good budget for them. They're very excited about it. I think their strategy is kind of interesting because in 2011, the court system pushed back initially on the governor's office on what they wanted to do. Or the governor's office in 2011 said, please make cuts to your budget. At that time, the court system pushed back and said, we're not going to cut our budget by that much. That was something that the governor chastised the court system about in 2011. And in the end, they had a really deep cut in 2011, and hundreds of workers had to be laid off in the court system. I believe it was more than 400, actually. So now, when the governor came to them this year and said, please cut your budget, it appears that the court system didn't want to make that same mistake again. And the court, godfully, accepted those budget cuts this year, went along with the process, you know, said, we're going to accept these and do everything we can. And now their budget is back where it's at.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're breaking down the state budget for the judiciary branch in New York. And our guest is Ryan Tarinelli, the New York Law Journal's reporter at the Capitol. So in that rundown of proposed spending with the funding that the judiciary is going to get in the upcoming fiscal year that I guess we're actually a week into already, I didn't hear you mention hiring back or reversing decisions about those septuagenarian judges, the four dozen who, you know, aren't being held back. Is there any move to save, you know, some of them?
There's definitely no indication at this time that the court system is moving it in that direction. You know, could they technically, there might be a legal argument that, you know, since they're in litigation or some sort of other constitutional argument that they might not be able to legally, but there's no indication that they're moving in that direction right now. It seems like, as of right now, the 46 judges, you know, there's not much of a chance of them getting extra funds and them returning to their bench. This is also tied up in litigation, and it's expecting to come before the Court of Appeals later on this year as to whether the court system really was correct in being able to lay off these judges in the first place, whether or not they followed the right process for getting, for, you know, showing them the door, essentially.
Will Chief Judge Janet DeFiore sit and hear that case? I mean, it's my understanding that she's, you know, kind of integrally involved in these decisions.
Yeah, she's actually listed as a defendant in the suit, so she would definitely have to, all the people I say it to, she would definitely have to step down. But it really raises this larger question within that case of, you know, how can you get a fair and really balanced hearing and a really balanced argument in a case where there's so many connections, right? Especially at the appellate level that we saw, these appellate judges were deciding the fate of their previous colleagues from other departments, right? And in the Court of Appeals, they're going to have to be deciding, you know, judges that they have connections to, right? And maybe not directly, but within the court system, and they're involved in the whole system. And when you get to these levels, right, people know each other, and there are a lot of different connections. So it kind of raises this larger question, like, how the heck can you get a really fair and square trial when there are so many different connections throughout this entire thing?
Courts have relied very heavily on remote proceedings over the past 12 months. But with more and more New Yorkers getting vaccinated, will they be returning to in-person activities? And if so, what does that mean for their spending needs for this upcoming fiscal year?
So the court system has moved forward with jury trials for civil and criminal cases. It should be noting that they're moving to that position. They moved to that position as cases still remain incredibly high across New York. And last year, when they moved to that decision, cases were much lower, much, much lower than when they decided to do that this year. Of course, you have vaccinations, which is another factor into it. But it could mean a lot more funding. It could mean that the court system is going to need a lot more revenue, right? If more courts are opening up, more juries are happening, you need funding for jury services, you need funding for court officers to be in the building, you need more clerks in the building to be able to file paperwork and whatnot. So, you know, if the vaccination program gets, if people get quickly vaccinated, if you get to herd immunity, you can definitely start to see a lot more funding, the state court system spending a lot more to try to keep up, particularly because there are a lot of looming questions about what the future holds, right? Especially with the housing issues, especially with some of this other backlog litigation that the court system is bracing for coming down the line.
It seems like everybody and their mother has gotten some federal stimulus money at this point. Has the state's court system gotten any funding, or are they, you know, the rare exception of a government entity that's had to do without?
You know, not to my knowledge, they haven't received anything directly. I believe the idea is that it gets funneled to the state government, but certainly the state budget is looking a lot better these days from the windfall from the federal government. And certainly court administrators are very happy with this budget now. You can only imagine that it'd be a lot worse if Washington didn't come through to the extent that it did for New York.
So as we talk, you know, we've got the budget going on, but there's a lot of big upheaval at the State Court of Appeals right now as well. We had the passing recently of Judge Feinman, and we have the planned retirement of Judge Stein. There's going to be another vacancy on the court at the end of the year. Where do things stand right now with attempting to fill some of these seats? Are there any developments on the horizon?
So later on this week, there are going to be a list of names provided to the governor outlining who he can pick for the position of Stein seat. There are also indications that this nominating committee that provides the nominations to the governor is going to be quickly moving to fill Judge Feinman's seat as well, who recently passed away. You know, supposedly, if the nomination committee gets to that point, possibly we could see two nominations by the end of session. Who knows? That is going to be a really interesting political dynamic, though, because those potentially two appointments, or at least one appointment, those would be sitting on an impeachment court for Governor Cuomo. So if it does get to that point within the impeachment proceedings against him, so you would effectively have, you know, the governor being able to choose definitely one, possibly two people that are going to judge his fitness for office if it gets to that point. The Senate could take a real issue with that, specifically because there's been so many calls in the state Senate for his resignation over the various scandals. So that's going to be really interesting. And this could really shape the trajectory of the court as well on a variety of issues. So, yeah, this major, major turnover at the Court of Appeals.
Well, there you have it. We've been speaking with Ryan Tarinelli, the New York Law Journal's reporter at the Capitol. Ryan, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And don't forget, you can enjoy the Capitol Press Room on your schedule, wherever you are, by downloading episodes wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and SoundCloud. And you can get our 24/7 Capitol coverage by following us on Twitter at Cap Press Room. Thanks for listening.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.